Bonsoir, mesdames et messieurs. Good evening. We would ask if you're going to have to sit in the aisles to please make it as much of a single file as possible so that there is an aisle that people can extricate themselves if they have to. Well, welcome this evening. I should tell you exactly what is happening in a sense that this is normally the world of chemistry class, world of chemistry drugs. That means that the students who take this class can say they took drugs in the fall of 2010. Not many do, and hardly any, we hope. We're pleased that you're here. We're sorry that there is a very difficult kind of crowd control situation, but I think you'll enjoy the presentation tonight. And just to make sure, I want to... Now we know where all of you live, and we know your phone numbers. My name is David Harp from the Chemistry Department, specifically from the Office for Science and Society. My colleagues, Joe Schwartz and Ariel Fenster, we participate in this, and I'm going to ask at this time for Joe Schwartz to come and introduce the speaker and the evening and the sponsors for this situation. Joe.
Thank you very much. We are going to try to sardine in as many people as possible because obviously this is a fascinating event. So if those of you in the back who are standing, let's try to get as many in there as possible. I would also ask you at this time, please, no cell phones. You don't actually have to discard them, but do turn them off. So... There's a couple of seats here, and in the aisle right in the front here.
This is being recorded on, if you go to the McGill site, on Be Cool TV, and everything will be up close and even more personal than from the back row. So go to the McGill site, Be Cool TV, and you can navigate to it. Is that close enough? Our experts say close enough.
We do have a few more places down here. How are we doing up there? Everyone is in? Wow, everyone in. Well, we'd like to welcome you to this second evening of the Lorne Trakay Public Science Symposium. Confronting Pseudoscience is our theme this year. Our sponsor is Dr. Lorne Trakay, sitting right here in the front, and we thank him right from the beginning for making this event possible and for bringing Randy to Montreal. The proverbial introduction for James Randi is really, the man does not need an introduction. He is a veritable icon. James Randi started as a magician a few years ago. He was an expert magician, not your ordinary magic club performer. He performed around the world in the tradition of Houdini, doing magic, doing escapes of all kinds, being dropped into a river in metal cases, staying down there for an hour and a half to see how long he could breathe. He obviously was successful in that endeavor. And after his magic and escape career, although certainly the magic is still with us, but he no longer does the hanging upside down from a crane escapes from straitjackets, which of course he used to do. But after that, he slowly transformed into an investigator of paranormal phenomena and pseudoscientific phenomena. And today is widely regarded as the world's leading expert in examining claims of the paranormal and various other pseudoscientific claims. And as you know, he has a standing offer of $1 million to anybody who can, under mutually agreed upon controlled conditions, produce any kind of a paranormal event. The $1 million remains unclaimed. And there have been, of course, a number of people who have attempted to cash in, but none of them have ever been able to deliver on this. If anybody here tonight wants to go home with $1 million, well, you might not quite go home with $1 million because it would have to be, the testing process would have to be agreed upon, but if anyone thinks that they can levitate without any outside equipment, or if you can read minds or perform telekinesis or douse for water in a controllable fashion or speak to the dead, Randy will be quite happy to give up his $1 million because our world would be all that much richer if something like that indeed were possible. He has been on TV numerous times over the years, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio appearances. He has been asked by the scientific community to take part in some testing procedures. The classic one was on behalf of Nature, one of the prime scientific publications in the world, when Jacques Ben Beniste, an immunologist in France, believed that he had some evidence for homeopathic effects. And Randy was involved, along with others, in examining this and discovered that, in fact, there was nothing there but self-delusion. He has examined homeopathy on British television, and the stuff is out there on YouTube. If you go around the YouTube, you will see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of absolutely fascinating clips of the man who today is widely regarded as the leading skeptic. And incidentally, skeptic is not a dirty word. Skeptic does not mean a disbeliever. A skeptic just says, show me the evidence. After the program today, Randy will be happy to take pictures with anybody. I'm not sure he's ready for 850, but he told me that he's ready for that. He will sign autographs on anything, although I think certain pieces of anatomy excluded. For those of you who are interested, he also will have available photographs, which are, of course, destined to be historic items, which he is willing to, of course, sign. And there will also be a question-answer event after the presentation. Well, you didn't come here to hear me. And before we get to the star of the night, we'd like to show you a video of Mr. Randy's various kinds of performances and experiences over the last couple of, I guess over the last three or so decades. And then you will meet Randy in person. Thank you.
there's something that you don't know about guns. It's a strange thing, but a die, you know, is supposed to have a, it has two on this side, and it has four on that side. Now, that's not the way it's supposed to be made. See, the four on that side and the two on that side, actually, it's supposed to be a five on that side, but it's not. This is not made properly. Two on that side, four on that side, two on that side, and five on that side.
How do you do that?
The amazing Rudolph, and I will show you how easily a skilled magician can reproduce any of these so-called psychic tricks.
Hi, I'm James Randi. I'm a magician. That is to say, I'm a fake. Watch this. I'm going to do a little trick for you. I'm going to bounce this pen on the edge of the table. Now I'll look away so you're sure I'm not blowing, but I want you to look right into your TV set, concentrate on it, make that pen fall off the table. Let's work on it now. Come on, concentrate. Stronger.
Gee, that was very good. How did you do that?
June 7th, we'll be offering $100,000 prize to anyone who can prove psychic power on our program.
You're thinking of a pizza, right?
No.
A small little rodent? Maybe a hat? A hat?
No.
A clothespin?
No. Wrong.
A shoe?
Gesundheit.
A hammer?
No.
We're going to get that money. We're going to make that money. We're going to make that money. We're going to get your money, Randy. You're going to be broke, man.
Do you believe everything you see on the news? How about a nationally reported story about a computer that determines the guilt or innocence of suspected criminals? Host James Randi, professional skeptic and debunker of frauds, takes us through the conception, the setup, and the payoff of these remarkable scams.
I'm James Randi, and in this special presentation, we'll look at the inner workings of some of history's most outrageous scams and the competent men behind them. Now, most cons follow a very simple set of rules. The first rule is that the con artist always wins.
Tonight on Nova, James Randi, magician and investigator of psychic phenomena.
Don't laugh, this is science.
For 25 years, Randi has explored the world of the paranormal and tested claims of supernatural powers. Now, Randi journeys to Russia to challenge psychics never before seen in the West. After decades of research, can we finally discover the secrets of the psychics?
Throw them up there on the stage. You don't have to leave with those pills.
He had people who were on medication, necessary medication, like nitroglycerin tablets for heart attack, digitalis, things like oral insulin. He had them come out of the audience and throw their pills up on stage.
Throw them up there. That's a blow of defeat for the devil.
As you see it, this is the real danger in all the faith healing.
It's one of the real dangers. The other danger is emotional dependence on charlatans like this, people who claim that they have an ability to tell you how to run your life and how to recover from disease.
Somebody praise him!
This week, Horizon is doing something completely different. For the first time, we are conducting our own experiment. We are testing a form of medicine which could transform the world. Should the results be positive, this man will have to give us $1 million.
Do the test. Prove that it works and win $1 million.
Can psychics really sense what you can? Can the stars predict your future? And thousands of nurses say their touch can heal.
I'll give them $1 million if they can prove that.
Tonight, the supernatural, exposed by an expert on the bizarre.
Randi and his foundation have put up $1 million as a prize.
Oh, this is the one in Finland.
To anyone who could prove they have paranormal abilities. $1 million. It's in the bank. We checked.
If they say they can defy gravity, step over to the window there and step out. And if you don't fall, hey, you win. You win.
Well, I've seen full houses before, but this is ridiculous. You'll have to take your heads off or something. It looks far too populated. But nonetheless, I'll see what I can do with it. My name is James Randi, as you probably guessed, and I have to disappoint some folks that are here this evening. I know that they were looking forward to this number, but I will not be doing my naked dance on fire. As a matter of fact, I must confess to you that there hasn't been that much call for it in later years. Some people are clamoring for it, but you'll have to miss that. So I'll try to substitute something else along the way. Now, I watched television this morning, Montreal television. What an exciting thing. Yeah, I started in at 5 o'clock in the morning. I just came in from London, England. Just flew in, and my arm's tired. And, boy, the jet lag is something else. First person I saw on television when I started to go over the smaller channels, which are the important ones that cost so much, first of all, was Kenneth Copeland. Oh, wow. What a winner that is. I warn you, if you ever decide to punch him out, don't hit his hair. You'll break your hand. I saw a couple of financial shows showing people how to be highly successful financially. I saw a horoscope show, of course. Of course. What else? And they were getting $4.89 a minute for their advice via the horoscope. Wow. And then followed Prediction 2000, and that was an exciting event, too. Listen, all of what I'm telling you is what I got on the channels, one after the other, at 5 o'clock in the morning. Come on, Canada. Let's try to wake up on this matter. Let's try to wake up. Prediction 2000 was followed by tarot cards. Now, I can't think. I really cannot think of anything more ridiculous than that, except for George Bush, for example. Tarot cards? You deal cards from a deck, and the way they pop up on the table, you interpret them. Now, wait a minute. If you shuffle that deck again right now and do it again, will you come up with the same cards? No, of course you won't. The chances are extremely small of that. But does that mean that your fortune changed in the last 30 or 40 seconds? Doesn't anyone think of these things? I don't know whether people think at all about it. Then there was a Catholic show on that was advertising tropical cruises. I can't imagine a more boring cruise, but maybe some of you can. Then endless programs on back pain and white teeth. You want one and you don't want the other, I guess. And then finally CTV came along and they actually had a newscast on there and it made some sense, except that the hostess of the show, a very pretty little lady, had a case of terminal lip gloss. So I should write to her about that. Now, folks, I'm an easy guy to get along with. I really am. I don't demand great things out of these so-called psychics and such. I forgot to mention one thing. Yes, I didn't tell you about that joke. I wanted to mention, so I'll mention it, of course, because I got the microphone. I had an asteroid named after me not too long ago. Isn't that exciting? Yeah, it's Asteroid Randy, you might have guessed. And at that time, Arthur C. Clarke, oh dear Arthur, miss him, who has now passed away, he was living in Sri Lanka at that time, and I called him and I said, guess what, Arthur, they've named an asteroid after me. And he said very dryly, he said, yes, it is quite an honor, isn't it? And I said, oh, you have one already, do you? And he said, oh yes, several years ago they named one after me. So I bid him goodbye. I got onto the computer right away and I looked up the International Astronomical Union. And I demanded everything about Asteroid Clark and Asteroid Randy. I had the great delight of sending Sir Arthur an email saying that I'd investigated the matter, and it turns out that my asteroid was many kilometers larger than his asteroid. I didn't hear from him again for quite some time, but we mended fences, so to speak. Maybe he took it badly. I'm not all that sure. Now, I put up something on my website some time ago. I had been receiving emails over the years about how you can tell that you're old. questions. You know, do you recognize what a zipper is? And if you don't, you're, well, never mind. I called it old as dirt. And I saw some kids in a store in Fort Lauderdale not too long ago. Now, this is quite remarkable. A little girl, a little boy, one this big and the other this big. They were with their parents. They were closing down this bookstore, a used bookstore. And I sort of watched them with interest because they were looking at things they'd never seen before. And the young fellow saw an Underwood typewriter sitting there. Typewriter, what's that, you know? He had never seen one before, so he pressed. He saw it looked like a keyboard, so he pressed a key and nothing happened. He pressed it about the same way you would on a computer keyboard, you see. Nothing happened. And his father said, oh, no, press it all the way. All the way. And the piece of type jumped up and hit the platen, and he was startled. He was really scared. He'd never seen anything like that. And then he said, oh, it doesn't work anyway. There's no screen. And then I looked at his little sister, and she was, ladies and gentlemen, I hope this isn't strange to some of you. If you're that young, I have to wonder. She had an old upright telephone there, you know, with a little bell in front and the receiver hanging on the side. She picked up the receiver and she put it up to her eye. She expected images out of it, I guess. I don't really know. But that just shows that there is a generation gap. Of course, I dread the fact that I may walk out in front of an audience one of these days and mention the name Johnny Carson, and people say, who? Oh, that would be terrible. But if I live that long, I'll be happy to be around, I can assure you. Now, I'm an American now. I was born in Toronto. That's the way people from Toronto have to say it, to say Toronto. T-R-A-N-N-A, I believe, is the correct spelling. And I moved to the United States. I became a citizen of the United States for various reasons that need not interest us right now. But if you want to ask me afterwards, I'll be glad to tell you the dreadful story. I became an American citizen, and naturally I became part of the milieu, the whole civilization, the surroundings around me, and with great enthusiasm. And I can tell you, you don't have to be told this specifically, but I admit it, that not too long ago we came out of 8 years of an administration that bashed science regularly. They based it all, you see, on faith-based thinking. Come on. Faith-based thinking, I can sell you anything I want to sell you. You want some swampland in Florida? Oh, yeah, very reasonable price. Now, the word faith, there are two different definitions of that. The Webster's Dictionary, which we use in the United States, there are two different definitions of faith. And one of them is belief in something that's not likely to be true. And another one is belief in something for which you have no evidence. And that's the way I go along. I go for that particular kind. But, oh, I must congratulate Canada in general, all of Canada, for using the Celsius procedure for measuring temperature. Hallelujah! I mean, Fahrenheit, C equals 5/9 of quantity F minus 32. You have to subtract 32 from it, and then multiply it by 5, divide it by 9, and you've got C. By that time, the temperature has changed. This is ridiculous. We haven't learned anything about the metric system, and do you know the reason for it? There is a distinct reason for it, and this may surprise you, as it does my American audiences, too. The reason that we're still on this old system of miles and feet and yards and what inches, incredible, awkward system, is that there are people who are in Washington, D.C. right now who lobby very heavily for that system to be kept, because they argue, first of all, the metric system was invented by atheists, and the worst kind, French atheists. That's bad stuff. Come on. We are stuck with this system, and they can't change it because these lobbyists are in there, and they're paid big money to keep them. Oh, the reason the Bible thumpers want it kept, by the way, is because it's closer to biblical measurement What's the term that would cover that? Bullshit. That's not true at all. In the Bible, it's even worse, but I don't want to get into that. Now, I'm a magician by profession, as you've been told by those who introduced me, and I thank you for the introduction. A magician by profession. Now, what does a magician do? A magician is a performer. A performer who goes out and fools people and lies to the people, but makes it very clear that they're being lied to. There's an expertise in the magic profession that maybe you don't recognize. I know how people can be fooled, and I know how they fool themselves. The second part is even more important than the first part. You can be fooled, ladies and gentlemen. You already have been fooled. And you've been fooled on a couple of different bases here. And I came walking out here, and I took the microphone. I didn't really need it. It's just simply a beard trimmer. This microphone does not work, by the way. Thank you for your services, but no thank you. I have the microphone concealed here underneath the beard somewhere. I always have a hard time finding it. It takes me 2 or 3 days sometimes. Now, I say that you can be fooled, and I prove it to you by demonstrating how you have been fooled. Okay? But you've been fooled on other bases, too. For example, I walked out here, I managed to avoid the tripod there, and I struggled over to the desk because my eyesight is really rather poor. I normally use glasses. Oh, these are not glasses. No, these are just empty frames. Now, why would a grown man, I'm certainly grown, well, not up that way, but in age, why would he step out in front of you and wear nothing but frames for glasses? To prove a point to you. Oh, God, they're ugly. I didn't know that. Now I can see you. Hi there. I use a couple of bits of deception like this regularly to show you that you can be fooled very subtly. Now, no one suspected that I wasn't using the microphone that I held in my hand. It turned out to be a beard trimmer. I use it for beard trimming, you see. Not too many people here have a requirement for that. Well, there's a gentleman down there that certainly does. Thank you, sir. I'm glad you showed up. Make me feel more secure. But you see, it's a bit of a trick that is done inadvertently. I don't have to come out here and say, I'm speaking into this microphone now to talk to you, and it's amplifying my voice through the electronic set. No. And I didn't have to say, oh, I'm looking at you through my glasses. No, I didn't have to deceive you by making a statement. I allowed you to believe what I wanted you to believe. And that's very much a lot of the way the magicians, professional magicians, work. Professional magicians are very respectable people. They are entertainers. They are actors playing the part of real magicians. So I often use the term conjurer, which is used in the UK. And as I say, I just came back from the UK, and they understand what I'm talking about with conjurer, and many American audiences don't know, and they don't care. Now, I want to discuss with you the attitude and the conclusions of average persons when they're subjected to certain sensory input. You see that people don't react the same way, necessarily. Generally speaking, yes. But suppose you're sitting out in a bit of a park and in a small town that you haven't been in before. You're waiting for someone to come along to pick you up or whatever. And you know that there's a riding academy around the corner. And you're relaxing on the park bench and you hear hoofbeats. Now, you're reasonably intelligent folks. I assume that much, and I had every good reason to believe it. Hearing the sound of hoofbeats coming from around the corner, what do various kinds of people expect? You would expect, and I would expect, a horse. A rational person will say, oh, there's a horse somewhere around here. But there are irrational folks out there, And some of these people, they will go for the wildest explanation they can hear of or even imagine. I can see one turning to the other and saying, "Ooh, did you hear that? Yeah, I wonder what it is. It must be a zebra." Not very likely. There aren't too many Canadian zebra that I know of. But then the real woo-woos, that's the term I use for people who will believe anything if a celebrity tells them, and they'll believe it if anybody who has a loud enough voice or is politically connected tells it to them and looks at them very endearingly and asks them to believe it, and to vote for them at the same time, I'm sure. These woo-woo people will not even say zebra. They go a step further. They turn to others and say, "What could that be? Oh, it must be a unicorn." So you see the difference. There are three grades: rational people, ordinary folks, you know, that think logically, and then the people who think a little far out, and then the woo-woos. And the world is full of the woo-woos, I can tell you that. They're all over the place, particularly on the media. Oh, I can tell you lots of stories on that. Now, you were told that we have a $1 million prize at the James Randi Education Foundation. We refer to that affectionately as the JREF, J-R-E-F. This prize has been offered to so-called psychics and prophets and paranormalists and whatnot for many years now, for 11 years, as a matter of fact, but nobody has come anywhere near taking it. There are two stages. The first stage is the preliminary stage. That's a good name for it, don't you think? No one has even passed the preliminary stage, in which the standards are very low. You don't really have to be a wonderful performer, you know, tightrope stuffer. No, nothing like that. You just have to be able to do what you say you can do. If you do that, hey, you passed the preliminary stage. Now we tighten things down. I'm getting a little worried. My $1 million might be out the window. It's not my $1 million. It was given to the foundation, I must say. So I don't care. You want $1 million here? No, not quite. I wouldn't want to lose that money, I can assure you. But the final stage, the second stage of the challenge procedure, the protocol and such, would award the $1 million if the person would pass the test. But no one has ever gotten to that point. We've never had to do the test because they all fail in the first aspect of it, in the very first aspect. And we're going to go into a few of the details on that. Now, SWIFT, S-W-I-F-T, named after Jonathan Swift, a very famous gentleman from many, many decades back who challenged people with his satire. You all know of Gulliver's Travels. I don't know if you know about the rest of Gulliver's Travels, aside from Laputa and a few places like that. But I can tell you, you should read it. It's really very stimulating and thought-provoking. Now, Swift, as I say, our webpage, gets approximately 9,000 hits a day internationally. That's a lot. And we've had our system slow down and stop on weekends sometimes when something exciting happens in the news. Now, I'll give you some examples of the things that have gotten people's attention over the years about which they've asked us questions. I happen to be wearing Florsheim shoes. Florsheim shoes, it's brand new shoes. It's been around for something like 120 years now. The family has been very happy with the success of the company, of course, and I wear them almost uniformly, and they're very satisfactory. Good product, really good product. One with a lot of integrity, very carefully designed and manufactured. And then the Florsheim family sold the company to an entrepreneur. Oh my, stand back. That can be very dangerous. Within a matter of a couple of months, people in the stores in the Florsheim stores were being offered MagnaForce shoes. Ooh, that sounds powerful. Well, it costs $25 a pair more to have them equipped with the MagnaForce device. It turned out that all it was a set of three magnets, one at the toe, one at the instep, one at the heel, little neodymium magnets inserted into the sole of the shoe. You paid, as I say, $25 more for that. And they said that this would help circulate the hemoglobin around your body. Duh. Now, hemoglobin has Fe, iron that is, as part of its formula, but it doesn't react to magnets. They said that, you know, the stagnant blood in your legs would rush down to your feet. I wonder if it would stay there. They didn't say anything what happened to it after. But these were the Magnafore shoes, and they were widely advertised. Oh, but they were endorsed also by a PhD. Ooh, that's got to get your attention. This PhD is named Gary Null, N-U-L-L, appropriately named. And Gary Null, it turns out, got his PhD for $40 from the diploma mill, but Fortran didn't know that. So they hired him to make the statements, and he endorsed the whole thing. Oh, he gave a wonderful physical theory about how well Magnafore shoes work. Well, the Forsheim company found out about this rather quickly. They bought the company back, and they're back in the saddle again, and you cannot buy any more Magnafore shoes. I hate to disappoint you, but you cannot get Magnafore shoes. Then gravity defier shoes. What? They simply have springs in the heels. So as you bounce along, you're doing nothing. You look like a fool. It looks like you're walking on carbon tacks or something. They don't help you. How could springs in your heels help you increase your power of the walk? It simply doesn't happen. Energy doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from somewhere, and there's no energy being added in there. The Q-ray, oh, the Q-ray is a wonderful one. That's still doing very, very strongly. This is a simple little U-shaped piece of metal. It comes in gold and gold plate and silver and various other metals. I guess lead, too, probably somewhere along the line. And it's supposed to help golfers particularly. Well, it helps the manufacturer, but I don't think it helps the golfers one bit. They have all kinds of gas savers, that is, petrol savers, for your car. They are simply a string of magnets that you tie around the carburetor of your car. It doesn't do a thing for it. And it's been tested endlessly. But the American government, I don't know about the Canadian government, but the American government is not going to be able to do anything to get them off the market. Because every time they get a complaint against them, they change the advertising very slightly. They just put a hyphen in or something like that. They change the advertising. There are water purifiers run by magnets. There's a magnetic pitcher into which you can pour your water and leave it for 20 minutes or so, and it's much better. It lines up the atoms and the molecules and the graphics on the peripheral or whatever, I don't know. Supposed to, anyway. Now, this is a serious thing. When I was a kid, my parents found out about radon water. Now, radon gas is radioactive. It comes from radium and other elements of that nature, and it is extremely dangerous. And yet, radon water, my parents almost bought it, but it was too expensive, which made me very happy. They couldn't afford it. But people in their day, about the time that I was born, were buying pitchers that had magnifiers of some kind in them, and radon water, and chemicals you put into the water. These people literally, glowed in the dark and died shortly after. There were thousands of deaths due to imbibing radon water. Now, this is something that I'm sure you've all seen in your pet blankets. Go into any pet store, you'll get a real kick out of this. Just don't giggle too loud, they throw you out right away. Giggle a little later or softer, and they won't throw you out. Well, maybe not. Pet blankets with magnets buried in them, and your pet rests much easier. That's my beer, isn't it? The other thing that I'm sure you got to be familiar with for a while, at least, is laundry balls. Oh, my. They were made for 85 washes and for 150 washes, two different prices. They were taken apart. They had nothing in them but regular water, plastic balls that just squished around in the washer. And you had to count. You had to count very carefully on a piece of paper how many times you used it, because the first one is only good for 85 washes and the second for 150 washes. You could have used those things as tennis balls or for anything else. You could have used them 1,000 times. They wouldn't do anything for your wash. But they were taken apart, and the Drug Administration in the United States looked at them with simply tap water with blue food coloring in it. Nothing else. And yet these things sold for a very large price, different prices in different parts of the country. The Smarter Image is the name of a chain of stores in the United States that sold them. They've now gone out of business, and it couldn't happen to nicer folks. Now, I deal a lot with religious claims, but I want to make one thing very plain to you. The James Randi Educational Foundation is not an atheist organization. I am an atheist, yes, an atheist of the second kind. I say that I can't prove that there is no God, and I don't see any definitive evidence to prove the existence of any deity. That doesn't mean I say God doesn't exist, or that any gods don't exist, because I can't prove it. I also can't prove that there isn't a unicorn someplace in South Africa, but that doesn't mean there are or aren't any unicorns. I think it's highly doubtful, but what do I know? Now, we're going to see another video here. I have to tell you a little bit about how this arose. I found out about a fellow named Peter Popoff, a preacher in the United States, charismatic evangelical preacher. He said he was healing people left and right, and he would bring them great fortunes and such, and they would just do this. It always involved sending him money, of course, as you might have guessed. And I went to one of the services that he held in San Francisco. And I have to go in disguise when I go to these places. I go as Adam Jerson. It's J-E-R-S-I-N. That is an anagram for James Randi, you see. No one has figured that out yet, but don't tell anybody, okay? It's a secret. And I put on a brown-red wig, and I dyed the beard brown-red color. And I put in very dark black contact lenses. And I go in there, and I put in a set of false teeth that make me talk like this more right. I put a fist. And that disguises me effectively enough that people stay away from me. They don't want to be anywhere near me, for one thing. And the more people I repel, the happier I am. But I went into one of the services, and I saw Reverend Popoff walking about and calling out the names of the people in his congregation, his audience, that is. He was able to walk up to somebody and call them by name. I thought to myself, I wonder how he's doing that. Now, he must have some means of communication. I watched very carefully the next service they had the next day, but I went early. And Mrs. Popoff was wandering around in the audience well before the main body of people came in, and she was asking questions. What is your name? Oh, well, Reverend Popoff would like to heal you. But what is your address? May I? Yes, let me have that, and we'll send our free magazine to you. Oh, wow, how could I resist that? And so I figured, oh, he's got some way of communicating with backstage. Well, my very good friend Steve Shaw, who is now known as Banachek, the mentalist, and coming along very famously in the entertainment world, he walked back there and came back to me with a big smile on his face. And I said, what are you grinning about? And he said, Popoff has got a hearing aid. Now, a guy that heals the deaf and the blind, you wouldn't think would need a hearing aid. You would think, if you think about it at all. See? And that gave me the clue. I'm not going to show you a videotape, but I have to tell you how it got to Johnny Carson. I've known Johnny Carson for a long, long, long time. I did a lot of his shows down through the years, and we got rather close. And I thought, I'll go to Johnny, and I thought, no, wait a minute. I think I'll go to Fred DeCordova, his producer at the time. And I went into Fred's office in Los Angeles, and I gave him this audio recording and some pictures. And Fred sat there, and he said, wow. And he turned to his assistant, and he said, bump the two actresses tonight. We're going to use this segment. We can't pass this up. And he reached for the phone, and I said, oh, wait, don't call John. And Fred said, oh, but John doesn't like surprises. I said, but think of the expression on his face when he realizes what the gimmick is that Popoff has been using. Fred thought for a minute, and he said, well, okay, but it's on your head. It was a good investment. It worked out very well. It's one of the strongest things Johnny later said that he had ever done on the program. Now, we're going to see this video today, as I say. I keep promising you every few seconds, don't I? But I want you to understand that when we went to this program, Johnny had not been told what the gimmick was. And he was a little miffed at that, but I said, John, trust me, this will be fun. And he said, well, okay. He didn't say this will be on your head, but like Fred did. But he was a little doubtful. He didn't like to go in uninformed. And you understand now that Johnny Carson doesn't know what the denouement of this whole thing is. Let's see that tape.
The
see, we've started the whole tape over again. I want that. We want the second cut of the tape, please.
Hearing how you did this and what it's supposed to show.
Well, we researched Peter...
by an expert on the bizarre.
Randy and his found it.
His emotional dependence on charlatans like this, people who claim that they have an ability to tell you how to run your life,
will be there
to recover from disease.
No, we're going to get that money. We're going to make...
No.
Confidence men behind...
That is Penn and Teller.
Investigator of subject.
Digitality.
In all the faith healing.
It's one of the real dangers. The other danger is emotional dependence.
No.
This first time, should the results be positive...
Small tech difficulty, pardon me, for this.
$1 million.
Can the psychics really sense what you can't? Can the stars predict your future? And thousands of nurses...
This...
The setup...
Necessary medicine.
This first time, we are conducting our own experiment. If here we're going to look at, would you tell us what we're going to see here and how you did this and what it's supposed to show?
Well, we researched Peter Popoff very, very well, and Mr. Popoff, pardon me, Reverend Popoff, is not going to be very happy with this, I don't think. You're going to see, first of all, a short segment of tape, as you would see it if you're watching it at home. This is what Popoff featured on his own program. You will apparently see a healing. Now, we went to Houston, Texas, and we discovered that the man was wearing, of all things, a hearing aid in his left ear, and a man who heals the deaf, Popoff himself.
Oh, I see.
And a man who heals the deaf and the blind isn't going to have much use for a hearing aid. One would think if God is speaking to him, maybe someone else is speaking to him. So when we got to San Francisco, we put this fellow Alec Jason as an expert in electronics and a surveillance man, and he put a scanner, an electronic scanner on it, and we picked up something interesting. But first, let's look at the first cut of tape.
All right, this is the tape as you would see it if you were watching the show. Okay, watch the monitors.
Who is Harold? I just believe that God is going to burn those cataracts off of your eyes right now. 34788 Foothill Drive. I tell you, the angels of God are round about your home. Oh, just take those glasses off and put your eyes. If you've got cataracts, if you've got glaucoma, I want you just to put your hand over your eyes as I pray for these precious ones. Sister, you've got eye problems too. Take your glasses off. Lay your hands on your eyes. Here it comes. God is going to give these precious ones divine surgery. Right now, Jesus! That's it. That's the anointing of the Holy Ghost. Praise God. Praise God. I tell you, the anointing is flowing through this place. Thank you, Jesus.
Okay, now let's recap what we've seen here.
Right.
These two people who were there had not met Papa
That's
before
right.
themselves.
Never told them.
And yet he calls out his name, and then he called out a number or something?
He called out their address.
Their address.
And they're astonished to hear this, because they didn't tell him. But what you don't know is that his wife has been touring around the audience, getting into conversation. Is Jesus going to heal you today? I see. Where do you live? This kind of thing. And they've filled out healing cards in advance of the program and handed them in. They're now backstage, and someone is sitting at a transmitter backstage. Let's see that same segment again. But now you will have the advantage of knowing what Peter Popoff is hearing in his left ear through a hearing aid.
Jerry Reed. Is it Reed? Jerry Reed?
It's a woman. She's praying for her husband, Harold.
Who is Harold?
He's got cataracts.
I just believe that God is going to burn those cataracts off of your eyes right now.
They live at 34788 Foothill Drive.
34788 Foothill Drive. I tell you, the angels of God are round about your home. Oh, just take those glasses off and put your eyes. If you've got cataracts,
she's got eye problems too.
You've got glaucoma. I want you just to put your hand over your eyes as I pray for these precious ones. Sister, you've got eye problems too. Take your glasses off. Lay your hands on your eyes. Here it comes. God is going to give these precious ones divine surgery. Right now, Jesus.
No, that is, that's disturbing when you see it.
It is indeed.
You tend to laugh at it, and yet these people obviously are so impressed with what's going on.
Oh, they're absolutely impressed. You see people collapse on the floor, tears running down their faces, believing that their kids with drug addiction are going to be healed now because he knew their name. He says he's talking to God, that God speaks directly to him because he's an anointed minister. And one, three things amaze me about that. First of all, it turns out that God's frequency, I didn't know he used radio, is 39.170 megahertz. And God is a woman, obviously, and sounds exactly like Papa's wife, Elizabeth.
Has he seen this tape, though?
No, he does not know about this until this very moment.
Interesting. Okay, we'll take a break.
Now, oh, thank you. Now, as I told you, John hadn't known about this, but there's something that happened. These programs were taped earlier in the evening, starting at 5:30 Los Angeles time. They were taped and then broadcast later on across all the time zones in the United States, you see. And if any editing had to be done, if something had messed up, they could easily take that period of time to fix it up. And they did, because John, not being ready for it, did something inadvertently. Now, there was John's microphone. There was one overhead aimed at me, and there was the audience microphone, you see. And there was a certain balance that was maintained among those instruments. And when John saw the denouement, the reveal, that was Mrs. Papa speaking, pardon the expression, but that's what he said. He said, "Oh, shit!" And then he grabbed his mouth like this, and he looked at the audience, and he went... To quieten the audience down. And I know where it is in the tape, and I always bust out in a big smile when that moment comes, because I know what really happened there. And he was shushing them down, and they got it edited out, so it worked very well. But John was quite surprised, and after the program, DeCarta, the producer, the audience was filing out, and he came over to the table where we were seated, and he looked at John, and he said, "John, we're going to get letters." And John looked up at him and said, "Yes, Fred, I believe we will, and you're going to answer them." And I'm sure they did. Now, that just shows you how vicious these people are. But I'm going to tell you something now. I just like doing this, but this is McGill. What the hell? Why not? I have audio tapes of Reverend Popoff doing his act. And I have recordings of the wife backstage with another woman named Sherelle, who was with her backstage and transmitting this stuff to Popoff in his concealed hearing aid. He said some things there that make those people the most despicable people you can imagine. There was one elderly lady of Afro-American descent, very obviously, sitting in a wheelchair that had been enlarged because she was very, very wide this way. And Mrs. Popoff said to Peter over the system, and we have the recording of it, "Peter, the next one is the big black nigger in the back. And Peter, keep your hands off those tits, because I know you." This shows the absolute lack of respect that these people have for the people who are giving them their money. I know it's shocking, but, and I normally don't tell this to audiences, but again, I haven't been here in 15 years, and I want to come back another 15 years, please. However, telling you that relieves me of a certain amount of guilt, because if I don't tell you, I will go away wishing that I had told you. To show you, and much more worse than that, much worse than that, you have no idea how bad some of those recordings get. I was afraid that Popoff might sue me on because of what got on the Tonight Show. So what I did is very quietly mailed him a cassette, an audio cassette, with some of that material on it. Just mailed it to him, put it in the mailbox, and walked away. Never heard from him again. But, Johnny Carson used to call me every now and then after his retirement and say, I just saw Popoff on television again. We didn't do him at all. He's still working. I said, yes, John, because these are unsinkable rubber ducks. You can't get them down because people don't listen. and they don't learn if they do listen. They don't pay enough attention. And the proof of it is something that Johnny never learned of. Of course, it just happened last year. Peter Popoff, that evangelist, brought in last year $1 million more than the amount that he brought in the year that we exposed him on the Carson show. Is there any justice there? No, there is not, ladies and gentlemen. These people need to be stopped in their tracks. And Peter Popoff is very active in Canada, too. Don't you think he isn't? He's in Toronto all the time. He holds huge meetings there, and people pay fortunes to attend these things. It's a dreadful thing. Really, it is. Now, I just recently had a heart operation. It seems to have worked rather well, I think. It was a cardiac bypass, a triple, as a matter of fact, and I survived very nicely. I always tell people that there was no homeopathy used, there was no acupuncture, no praying or chanting or incense or anything like that. I used the thing that you may have heard of, medical science. You've heard of that? I hope that you keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. They saved me from not being here tonight. And at the same time, I had chemotherapy for 6 months for another condition. I'm doing very well at 82. Hey, so in another 15 years, I expect to be invited back, okay? Oh, thank you. Now, I must tell you that when I do these lectures, and I do them all over the world, I'm on the way to Australia next, as a matter of fact. And, Canada to Australia, that's a big jump. And culturally, yes, as well. But I won't get into that. No, Australia, you know, I love the country and I love the people. As I do you folks here, of course, because this is where my roots are. But boy, are there differences between the two of them. One is a cowboy country and the other one is Canada. But they're really people of great integrity and I really love them and I do everything I can for and with them. Now, as I say, I do these lectures all over the world and I often get the academics coming to me afterwards and they say, things like, these people that believe in this sort of nonsense, Randy, they must be really stupid. Now that triggers my defense mechanism. And I say, wait a minute, really? Do you think that people would believe in this sort of thing are stupid? Well, they must be pretty dense. So then what I do is I show them some sort of a brain buster, a bit of mentalism of some kind, you see. And that usually makes them rear back and say, wow. And I say, wait a minute, are you dumb? Are you stupid? Can you apply that to yourself because you got fooled by something like a simple magic trick? I'm going to do something for you now, show you the kind of thing that I would do to try to convince these people they shouldn't think of other people as being so stupid. I talked to a young lady in the audience, and in a big audience here, I can't find her. Where is the young lady that I... way back there, yes, hi. Put your hand up against me. Okay. Now, you don't have a microphone, and I do, so there, ha ha. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell the folks here the arrangement we made, okay? I went out into the hall, and I saw you standing there looking pretty, and I thought, well, I'll probably take advantage of this show. No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't. What I said was, would you like to participate in a small experiment? And you gracefully agreed, and I asked you to... the book was... I don't have the book. I don't know where it is. But it's a guide to Montreal. Am I correct? Yeah. Oh, no. The one you eventually used. What was that? That leaf that it was... it was a leaf that we got from the university here anyway. Something that was in circulation around there. And... I ask you, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I simply ask you to turn to any page in there and to run your finger over the page and don't open it up, no, don't let anyone see it, no, please. You remember what it is, I'm sure. And so I ask you just to run your finger around there and stop at any word, not a word like if or but or something like that, a little more significant word perhaps. Now, this experiment is one of those things that works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't work all that well. So we'll give it a try, but it's called mentalism. I apologize for the result if it's wrong, but I'm going to step to the board over here, and I have a Oh, someone picked up the big magic marker that was on the floor here. Where is it? Oh, it's up top here. It flew, you see, a miracle. How do these things happen? I just don't understand. I'm going to go to a blank page here, and I'm going to start writing, but I'm not going to look at the young lady, because if I do, I might be getting body language, you see. Body language is, if I'm right, she goes, and if I'm wrong, she goes. So I'm going to try not to get any body language, but I'm just going to start writing here and see if I can come up with something that might be significant. Oh, are you breaking up the funeral? When I walked out here, I thought it was a funeral. I wasn't too sure. And it may be. Okay, I'm going to start writing here, and I won't look at the young lady, and I'll just make some wild guesses here. This may be one case where it's not going to work, and I have to apologize in advance. No. Well, it's a very bad magic marker. What noise? No. Wait a minute. Possibly. I don't know. Well, the young lady, where is she again? Oh, over there, sorry. Well, if I walk that far across the stage and after, you won't be over there, you'll be there, right? I should know geometry enough to figure that out. All right, would you tell the audience, please, what was the word that you chose at random from off that page? Really? That was the only suitable word on the page? I want to know what that's all about. Well, obviously... Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I've done this before, and when it happens, I'm really astonished. Come on, I know I can tear the paper. I'm not that weak. That was delicate. I got it upside down. Now, folks, the young lady was not in cahoots with me. She didn't cooperate in any way. What I told you about what she did was absolutely correct. And she is not a confederate of mine. I just chose her out of the crowd there who was waiting to be let in, the maddening crowd, as they say. And she volunteered to do it. She is not a confederate. But many people say, oh, she's got to be a confederate. It wouldn't have worked otherwise. And that was one word taken from quite a few thousand, and the only restriction I made was don't make it and or but or something simple like that. And she chose a doozy, didn't she? Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. Okay, this is what they call mentalism. It's simply a magic trick that appears to be done entirely with the brain. Wrong. There are all kinds of things that can be used in doing mentalism. You're familiar with Darren Brown, are you, or are you from the UK? Well, you may have seen some of his performances that are really quite remarkable. I know Darren very, very well. And my good friend Banachek, who was one of the alpha kids, but that's another story altogether, but you can read my webpage and find out about it. These people are mentalists, and they are magicians. They are conjurers, if you will. And they're very honest folks because they tell you, I'm going to fool you, and I'm going to use trickery to do it. And they go right ahead and do it, as I just did here. I use this example of doing mentalism to show you again that you can be fooled. And some other people are being fooled all the time. This is scary to tell you about. I've got to do a little demo for you here. This is an invention that I came up with. It's called the counterfeit detector pen. Ooh, that sounds a little bit handy. It'll detect counterfeit bills? Oh, yes, it will. We were told all about that. Wait a minute, I have a wallet in here, and I hope I have some money in it. Oh, this is, I don't have the Canadian money in here, I think, or do I? No. Oh, did I? Oh, wait a minute. Yes, yes, I think I put it in here. Something. I'll be with you in a minute. I've got to search around, find where I've gotten my stuff all messed up again here. No, that's not it. Come on. My notebook. Get off there, you fool. I talk to my props a great deal. Did it get in there or not? I guess it didn't. I just have to pass up that demonstration. I'm sorry. I didn't have, I wanted to have an American builder show it to you with. But the Drymark pen is patented to detect counterfeit money. What it is made by the Drymark Pen Company, and it simply has in it iodine, of all things, tincture of iodine. It's that simple. Now, if you stroke it on a bill, and the bill turns black, that is where you stroke it, they say, that means it's counterfeit. Oh, really, is it? How do you prove that? Well, they say that counterfeit bills are printed on cheap paper. Come on, friends. Would any counterfeiter print a bill on cheap paper when he's going to turn it into a $100 bill? Let's get real. You would spend the best money for that particular paper. Now, regular currency in any country in the world will not react to this pen of iodine because iodine turns black when it hits starch. Regular paper, ordinary notepaper, does have starch in it. It's called sizing. And the sizing that's in there is put there in order to make it be handled better in duplicating machines and such. And when it goes into the duplicating machine, it slides around much easier. It functions much easier. That's why they put it in there. And it turns black when you stroke it with a pen filled with iodine. But that's the only function that this pen has. It doesn't detect counterfeit money at all. I called the Secret Service in the United States. They handle that sort of thing, counterfeit money. And I asked them, but I said, does it work? He said, wait, I'll have to look it up in the book. And he went flip, 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 flip through the book. And he came up with the answer. He said, sir, it is not dependable. Not dependable. Does that mean it doesn't work? He said, well, he said, you could say that. And I told him, I said, well, why don't you say that? He said, because it's not in the book. After all, he is an employee of the American government. He wants to be perfectly correct. He doesn't do anything that's not strictly kosher with the American government. That's a good excuse, is it? No, I don't think that's much of an excuse. But things like counterfeit pen detectors are sold all the time. They're in every market. They're on television constantly. But wait a minute, does that mean that we're being let down someplace? Yes, at a certain level we are being let down. And on many aspects of being let down, it lies with the scientific community. I got a call a few years back. My office assistant answered and put the hand over the phone and said, it's a laboratory in California. I said, okay, I'll pick up the phone. I picked it up. The gentleman said, Mr. Andy? I said, yes. He said, I'm speaking to you from Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. Now, Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, believe me, are very, very prestigious. I swear you can go there and throw a brick in any direction and get a PhD in physics. Not that you want to necessarily, but it may be a public service. You can't tell. So the fellow said, I'm sure you have lost your $1 million. I said, really? And I trembled, of course. Yeah, sure. And he said, we have a fellow here named Ronnie Marcus. And I said, and what does Mr. Marcus do? He said, he can do miracles that we have no explanation for, and we're PhD physicists. Well, I was suitably impressed, of course. And I said, what can he do? And he said, well, one demonstration that he does consistently is he takes a bottle of matches, a box of matches, regular wooden matches, like this kind of a thing, and he can make it do wonderful things. He said, we went out to a grocery store, and he asked us to get him a box of matches like this, and we bought 24 in a package. This is science now, remember. They don't buy one box. They can't, for one thing. But they bought 24 of them, and then they took them back to the lab, and they mixed them up to randomize them, and they took one at random without looking. Okay? This is science. And then they weighed it very, very carefully to within micrograms. And they took out one of the matches and they stroked it to make sure that it lit. Ooh, it lights, so it's an ordinary match, an ordinary matchbox. And they gave it to Mr. Marcus. And Mr. Marcus accepted it gratefully, and he said, I'm going to do something with this that matchboxes should not do. And this is what he did. He sat it on the back of his hand like that, and he just gestured, and it stood up on the back of his hand. And then he relaxed a bit, and it went back down again. And they said, now we have examined it with polarized light and infrared light and the whole thing, and we have x-rayed it, we've examined it very, very thoroughly, but every time he puts it on the back of his hand, it stands up, and then it goes back down again. And I said, well, but at that time I was also signaling to my office assistant, who went into the next room and picked down from the shelf Barton Gardner's book of impromptu tricks, because he was an amateur magician and he knew the trick. It's a very, very simple trick. I don't know how it's done, mind you, but I'm working on it. Oh. And he found the trick in the book, you see, and he turned to the page and he went to the copy machine and he copied the page of the book, because he knew what I was going to do. And I said to the scientist in California, I said, do you have a fax machine there? And he said, oh, yes. He said, may I have the number? I gave it to Andrew, and I said, I just signaled, yeah, go. So he went to the fax machine, he laid it down, he dialed the number, and the fellow on the phone said, oh, the fax machine is starting to buzz right now. And I said, read what comes through there, and then let me have your opinion. This is a simple trick, ladies and gentlemen. You simply leave the box open a little bit like that when you lay it down on the back of your hand, you see? And then when you close the box, you pinch some skin from the back of the hand, and then it goes up, you see? And then it goes back down again when you relax. Okay? But it goes up at your will. Isn't that astonishing? This is a kid's trick. An impromptu trick, right? Lay down. Behave yourself. Stand up. There you go. Hey! So the physicist on the other end of the phone started to read it, and I heard him reading it, and I say glued to the receiver, and he said, Martin Gardner, and I said, I see, a box of matches, yes, and take out some of the matches, and I said, I said, hello? He said, oh, I'm here, all right. Click. He hung up the phone, but he saw how naive he had been. Not stupid, no, just naive. He didn't know how these things were done. I don't expect a scientist to know how magic tricks are done. But I do expect scientists, when they get into trouble by examining so-called psychics, to call a magician, an experienced, qualified magician, and ask them if they have any opinion. Now, Johnny Carson did that with me, and I gave him the opinion. He was a good amateur magician himself, but some of those things puzzled him. When he wanted to know, he called me. But Lawrence Livermore has never called me back. I don't know why. It's very strange, don't you think? Now, I have to show you something which it's a slightly different model from the ADE 561. Sounds familiar? No, of course not. It's a dowsing rod. It detects explosives. Oh, wow. Well, the American government spent $1.2 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars of American tax money, that's some of mine, you see, spent that to give it to the Iraqis so they could detect bombs and explosives when they came in to their area. And I have a contact who I won't even tell you what agency he's with, but he keeps me up on this sort of thing, and he said not too long ago a big armored truck drove in. They didn't check it for explosives, they just used a silly thing like this, a dowsing rod. Oh, it's much bigger than this. Hey, this is the real thing. This isn't one of your amateur machines, you see. And it has a switch on the front here. You turn it on, you turn this one on, and the needle jumps up. And a little light lights here. Looks impressive, doesn't it? I'm waiting for the photograph here. Looks impressive, doesn't it? Yeah, sure it does. And it's got a rotating handle on the bottom. See, when you hold it by the handle here, it'll swing all over the place, and it's indicating the board over there. You see? I can make it indicate any damn thing I want, you see. Oh, look at that. It's indicating the... Sir, you're being indicated. I think you're an explosive. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to unscrew a piece on here so you can explain or understand a little bit more. This is the brass receptacle. At the bottom, it says you must not undo this, or the warranty is void. Ooh. So I can't get my money back. This was actually sent to me by somebody who was swindled by it, and we put it into our museum of curios. There's a little brass container on the bottom here, and it does screw apart with great difficulty. And I screwed it apart to look inside. And guess what was in there? Green aquarium sand. That's all. It was half full with green aquarium sand. I know because I went to the aquarium store and I showed it to them. And they said, oh yeah, that'll be the stuff here. And they gave me an identical sample of it. Green aquarium sand apparently can pick up explosives. That's strange. I had no idea that it would do that sort of thing. And wait a minute, you saw the little light go on here, didn't you? Yes, a little red light. Okay, let me show you what's inside this. And it says right on here very clearly, there are no user serviceable parts inside. That's true. Opening the case will void any warranty or guarantee or return option. Ooh, I'm going to be out $740 to buy one of these things. And we gave $1.2 billion to Iraq to buy them. I'll open it up. Let's see what we find in here. Oh, it looks very impressive. What? Part of the screw in here. Let me just take that out. There we go. Put that aside. And, circuitry. Look, there's electric stuff in here. Well, we looked at what this particular printed circuit is. It's dated 1979. And it has condensers, capacitors, and things like that on it, and lots of little resistors. We looked up the serial number on it. It is part of an early TV remote control device. And that detects explosives. Oh, wait a minute. You see the red and, rainbow wire here. Connected to nothing. It's glued onto the other side of the board with hot glue. It's not even connected. Oh, there is a circuit in here with the switches and such. All it does is light the light on the outside of the machine here. That little red light that you see there, that's all it does. It's not connected in any other way. We spent my American government, mind you, $1.2 billion. But wait a minute, it was sold in Canada, too, under a couple of different names, exactly the same instrument. It does not work. Dowsing is a complete, total farce and a delusion. Now, we have offered our prize, our $1 billion prize, to dowsers all these years. And they always say, oh, yes, this will be 100%. Oh, this will be successful. Oh, Mr. Andy, you've lost your mind. There's no question of it. And they can't do what they say they can do. It's what we call the ideomotor reaction. It doesn't mean idiot, no. Ideomotor reaction. The ideomotor reaction is such that when you have one of these unstable systems in your hand, and by the slightest little slope of your hand, or turning of it, or twisting, you can make it move in any direction you want. You tend to do that when you know what the answer is. If you know that the thing you're looking for is sitting over there, the rod will swing right around and face to it, and you'll have found it. But it's blinded, and you don't know where it is in the audience, it will not swing to point to it, because you don't know where it is, and the ideomotor reaction doesn't take place. That's a swindle. Now, in Iraq and all over that area of the world, people are dying every day because this is the stupid thing they use to detect bombs. And they don't detect bombs. This, I almost mentioned the agency. This fellow that I know over there in one of the American agencies, a major one, he told me that just the day before that they had lost 8 soldiers in a jeep. They were pedaling along the highway, and they had been tested to see if anybody had planted bombs on it or anything. Oh, no, you're perfectly all right. 100 yards down the highway, boom, the whole thing went up. They were all killed. And that's what happens every day from these quacks, these fakes, these frauds. And in England, the ADE 561 was manufactured there and shipped all over the world. They've now prohibited from being exported. Of course, there are ways of doing it, and it's done every day, and they're still showing up in Iraq. It's criminal. It should not be allowed. But there's another thing that's quite criminal, too, and I'm sure you're much more familiar with this. Homeopathy. Now, I'd like to see a show of hands. How many people think they might be able to give some sort of a description of what homeopathy is supposed to do? Let's see hands. Oh, great number. All right, this gentleman down here with the attractive beard. In a good, loud voice, would you tell us what you think homeopathy probably is?
What it is?
Yes. What does it consist of? How does it work, or does it work?
First of all, it says that light cures light.
Light cures light, yes. That's correct.
If something poisons you, then the same poison is going to kill you.
Okay, that's a very good description. I thank you. Yeah, like cures like. This was originated by a fellow, an Austrian fellow who lived in Switzerland. In Switzerland, most of the quackery we have today comes from Switzerland. I hate to accuse them of that, but it does. That's on the record. Well, Hahnemann said that like cures like. Now, what that means is that you take a very, very small amount of the substance that could produce the same symptoms in your body, and you take that very small amount, very, very highly diluted, or you have no idea how much diluted, and you administer that to the patient, and the patient is cured. Really? Well, let me give you some facts. The most popular of all of the homeopathic medicines that you can buy in pharmacies all over the place is a compound made to relieve the symptoms of flu, and it's made from a duck liver. They could make plenty of homeopathic medicine from one duck liver. Duck livers are very small, little tiny guys like this. The duck may be allowed to die of old age or kindness or something like that. It doesn't have to be slaughtered either. Check. There we go. All right. You can't get good health these days. One. Oh, hey, I'm up. Hello. All right, I'll talk very slowly then. Now, with one duck liver, now this is a fact, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, is it something? Oh, I've got something else in there. Hello. Yes, I have something else in my pocket which was touching the switch. I apologize to you, sir. And we should all applaud the gentleman. He wasn't doing it either. Thank you. Now, you can make from one duck liver enough of these pills, homeopathic pills. Are you ready? You're all seated? Good. Well, the people in the back may fall down. With the sun at the center of a big sphere and the orbit of Pluto, which used to be a planet, way on the outside, and then a little bit beyond that, you would make a sphere that could be filled with homeopathic pills made from that one duck liver. The dilution is so great, you have no idea. Now, I'm going to illustrate for you just how big it is. I lost my pen again. Where is my pen? Here it is, someplace in here. No, I've lost the pen permanently this time. Where did I put this silly thing? There we are. Thank you. Now, this is a mathematics lesson. 10 to the power 1 is 10. We all know that, okay? 10 to the power 2, or 10 squared, is 100. It's the number of zeros after the 1, okay? And 10 to the third, of course, is 1,000, etc. Now, they will use dilution. What they do is that the rule of homeopathy, you take one part of the active substance, whatever that may be, and you have to shake it up in 10 parts of water, but it has to be also shaken in three different directions 10 times. 10 is the magic number that we use. Don't look at me, I didn't make it up. So you take the compound, you put it in there, and you shake it 10 times this way, 10 times this way, and 10 times this way. That's a one solution. That's one part in 10. That's what you would call a one solution. Now you make a two solution by taking one part of that water and putting it in 10 parts of water, and you do the same thing all over again in three different directions. That gives you a two solution. And then, as you see, a three solution. It goes on. Oh, they don't use these solutions at all. Are you ready? They start using the dilutions at 10 to the power of 34. That is 10 followed by 34 zeros. If you think I'm going to write a note, I'm not. I can assure you. But that is well beyond what they call Avogadro's limit, which is 10 to the 23rd. What that means is when it's diluted that much to 10 to the 23rd, there's only a possibility of there being one molecule or atom of the original substance there. When you do it one more time, there's one chance in 10 of there being one atom or molecule, and it keeps on going. 10 to the 24th is very dilute, but oh, wait a minute. They do it all the way up. You see this? Good. All the way up to 10 to the power of 1,500. Incredible. Incredible. That's the dilution. Of course, there's not a trace of the original substance in there. But the vibrations are there. Oh, boy. Vibrations. These people, if you gave them this whole auditorium full of vibrations, they wouldn't know what they were or what to do with them or what they looked like. They just don't know. And the latest thing in the quantum field is quantum vibrations. That's obviously much more powerful even. Now, a fellow named Jacques Benveniste, a French gentleman. Whoops, I turned two pages, sorry. Mm-hmm. Jacques Benveniste came up with a wonderful idea. He founded a company called DigiBio. Now, I must tell you, and you've probably heard of them, they award every year out of Harvard, they award the Ig Nobel Prize. And Jacques Benveniste is the only man who ever won it twice. What a distinction. He won it first time for this whole theory of homeopathy. And then he won it for this circuit. I hope you're ready for this. Very bad artwork here. I apologize for that. These are two beakers of water, okay? This one over here, this is homeopathic. It's been treated. Whoops, there you go. It's been treated the right way, so that's the powerful stuff. This is plain water. Boo, hiss. Nothing there. Just ordinary water right out of the tap. So what you do is you make a circuit like this. These are batteries. There's a switch here. And remember I said that 10 was the magic number in homeopathy? So you run the wire up here, and you run 10 turns of wire around here. You lead across over here, and you run 10 turns of wire around there. And then you connect it over here like that. And then you close the switch here. For how long? See, 10 seconds. You see, they can be instructed. They really quick. They pick it up quick like that. Yes, 10 seconds. And DigiBio will do this by credit card, of course, or you can send them a check in advance. It's got to be a registered check, of course. But they will do this, and that makes this water over here, the ordinary tap water, into homeopathic water. Now, I do agree that they both have the same power to cure. It's called zero, because you cannot tell the difference. So I did a test of homeopathy with the Royal Society in the UK, and the BBC. We did a test, and I said I would give them $1 million. I'd waive the preliminary test, but if they could win this test, I'd give it to them directly. I was committed legally to do it. I gave them the account number, the whole thing. They had access to it. And they did a test of homeopathy. It came out absolutely negative, and the homeopaths who designed the test and approved of the protocol, that Edward, oh, very, very stiffly, oh, you're going to win the prize, no problem whatsoever. Hallelujah. Yeah, right. They didn't win the prize, and they immediately lit up and said, oh, well, there was something wrong with the test then, because we know that homeopathy works. This is the kind of people these folks are. Homeopathy is a total delusion and a fake. It does not work. And I have offered the $1 million prize for 11 years now to any homeopath or anybody else who can prove that there is a difference between ordinary water and homeopathic water. They should be lined up at the door out here, beating on the door. They should be lined up with the scythes and pitchforks and the torches, as they did in The Bride of Frankenstein, remember? No rioting, go to your homes. There's no beast. No, there is a beast, and it's called homeopathy. This is a silly thing. Sure, it's a silly thing, but we're stuck with it. We are stuck with these medicines that are in pharmacies all across this country and the United States, and certainly in England, where it's very big. Even Prince Charles said that it was good. And we know, well, it's got to be good if Prince Charles says it is. Would he make a mistake? Ooh, of course not. Yeah. Now, I have, I heard a sad tale from, you see, they say that that you've got to be very careful about homeopathy. You can take as much of it as you want, but that you've got to take it on a regular basis. In fact, this fellow in Florida, poor man, he died of an overdose. He forgot to take it. I'm glad you got it. Died of an overdose? He forgot. Never mind. You have to work on it. Now, they say that it's natural, you see. That's the word that they all use in all this quack medicine. It's natural. Well, bird poo and gravel are natural, too, and I don't eat them. Do you? But they're natural, so they must be okay for you. Now, who's responsible for all this nonsense we're going through here? I'll tell you in one word. The media. Because they don't care. They don't give a damn one way or the other whether what they say, what they publish, hurts people or misleads them or costs them money or their emotional security, as long as the sponsors are happy. Montel Williams, you know who Montel Williams is? Okay, he's off the air now on his regular program, but he supported Sylvia Brown, this harridan of a woman there, who was carrying on and taking all of his support and all business, and he was raving over her. And he appeared on a radio program. I've got the tape. I've got the audio tape of it. And he was asked, Montel, do you believe in psychics? And he said, oh, no, of course not. Especially not Sylvia Brown. So I said, but you have her on your program all the time. He said, oh, yes, she brings me sponsors. Bottom line. Now, that kind of a person, ladies and gentlemen, pardon the expression, but this is what they're known as. They're known as the whores of the media business. They will do anything in order to please the sponsors, the people who pay them money. They don't care whether it hurts people or not. Now, PBS is the public broadcasting system in the United States of America, and they regularly have people like Gary Null, he's the fake PhD that I told you about, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, oh, there's a winner for you. These people, they use them during fund pleadings, and that's a very important part of PBS's business to try to keep operating. It's very important for them. I gave up contributing to them a long time ago when they started to use these quacks and these nonsense purveyors. Deepak Chopra, I have a challenge with any reporter. If we're near a bookstore, I take them to the bookstore and I say, go to the Deepak Chopra section. It's huge. Just huge. Hundreds of books. I say, take any book off the shelf, turn to any page, and within two pages on either side, I'll show you a scientific howler. Because Deepak Chopra doesn't know science in any respect whatsoever, but he's getting fabulously rich doing this sort of thing. Now, I have sent out my challenge to all these people for the $1 million. You know the name John Edward. Of course, you've seen him on television, I'm sure. He's the one who talks to the audience. He talks to the dead. I, too, can talk to the dead. Do they answer? No. Why? Because they're dead. That's not a mystery to me. But John Edward, I sent him a personal notarized certified copy, as a matter of fact, of the challenge, saying we would pay him $1 million if he could prove that what he was doing was the real thing. Well, we didn't hear from him. We did hear from his agent. The letter was very brief. Mr. Randy, not even dear Mr. Randy, can you imagine? I knew this was heavy. He said, Mr. Randy, John Edward does not respond to criticism. Yours truly. Can you answer? I mean, when the dean calls you up and wants to discuss something with you, I don't respond to criticism, Dean. Thank you. Goodbye. I wouldn't try that if I were you. And Larry King, she told Larry King, Sylvia Brown did, that she didn't know how to find me when she was supposed to answer the challenge. She agreed to do the challenge. Oh, yeah, for the $1 million. She agreed on his program in front of a huge audience internationally. She agreed to do it. But then she said she couldn't find me. Wait a minute. She talks to dead people and I'm alive. And I'm in the phone book as well. I'm sure she finds a phone book someplace if she looks hard enough. And Google has 1.4 million references to me and my foundation. So I think she could probably find a way of contacting me somehow. Now, the New York Times, that very respectable newspaper in the United States of America, they sometimes really mess up on stories. Some years ago, they came out with a story from Ed Mitchell. Ed Mitchell is one of the astronauts, those brave gentlemen and women who went off into outer space, and some of them visited the moon, actually stood on the moon. Wow, what a feeling that we had human beings standing on the moon, and they came back with rocks in their hands. Wow. He's a hero. Ed Mitchell's a hero. There's no question of it. But he also fell for Uri Geller, the fellow who bends spoons. I have to tell my audience who Uri Geller is now. He's rather fallen out of favor. He's not in fashion anymore. And Ed Mitchell did an experiment, which he on the way to the moon and back in one of the space capsules. And he said that the chances of the experiment being correct by chance alone were 7,000 to 1. Now, any experiment that has that odds against it must be a very, very significant experiment, really, obviously. Well, he said that he made a little deck of ESP cards. They had five different symbols in them, a lot like a regular deck of cards, and shuffled up and that kind of thing. And he then started them out on the table, said, okay. And he got in touch with a psychic on Earth, a fellow named Olaf Johnson. And he said the chances of Olaf Johnson getting the results he did were 7,000 to 1. That's significant. That is really significant. Ah, wait a minute. This is what the New York Times didn't report. Actually, there were four psychics. He didn't mention the other three. He didn't work with them. But Olaf Johnson did work. Or did it work? Well, the results were so negative in the guesses that he made on the order of that deck of cards that it was 7,000 to 1 against chance that it would be that bad. He missed that badly, but Mitchell didn't think to mention that. In other words, the experiment failed so badly, the chances of it failing that badly were 7,000 to 1. And there was no follow-up in the New York Times. I've never quite forgiven them for that. They knew the details, but they decided to just let it lie and go away from it. We have another video to show to you. And this one, folks, I have to warn you in advance, there's a lot of blood being thrown around. Now, some of us are very sensitive to seeing blood, and I am. I'm very squeamish on that, particularly if it's my own. You're going to see a lot of blood being thrown around. I'll tell you how this came up. I said to John, I need to go out into the audience waiting outside before they come into the studio and choose somebody, and I chose a fellow of sufficient size and temperament. And I said, we'll take you backstage and we'll call you out at the time we're going to do the operation, a psychic surgery operation. Psychic surgery. Ooh, that sounds great, doesn't it? Well, John agreed to do that, and the fellow laid on the table, and John introduced me, as you'll see in a moment, and we did the psychic surgery thing. I made a joke halfway through this episode, just to take the tension off, because some people were getting a little faint when they were doing this sort of thing. Some people really react to the sight of blood. This was the blood of Johnny Carson's secretary, as a matter of fact. So we drew that in the nurse's office from her. She volunteered that. And so I'm forever grateful to her. And we used that in this little bit of sleight of hand that you'll see here. But there were people looking a little faint around the face. So, yeah. Remember, it's not the blood from the guy that's on the table, okay? So don't feel offended by this, but it's going to... I make a joke halfway through it there that I think maybe you'll relax a bit and laugh at. I hope you do. If you don't, I'm in deep trouble. But it is blood. It's not his blood. Let's see that tape, if you please. Thank you.
I want to point out again for the people who just might have joined us. For the people who might just have tuned in, a little word of warning here. If you have a queasy stomach, the sight of blood bothers you, we suggest you don't watch this. This is James Randi, who's going to give you an idea of what the psychic surgeons in the Philippines actually do on people who go down there and pay good money. You all set?
Indeed.
All right, we have our patient. It's all yours.
Okay. Now, this is the time to look away if you need to, because it's going to get a little gory from now on. The psychic surgeons of the Philippines are, they think, Sandy, okay?
Everything's fine.
They're pretty heartless folks. They just don't much care for the feelings of people. They don't certainly care for their health at all. And, of course, they're not in any way trained to do this sort of thing. They just put on an act as if they are trained. Now, what you're about to see is a barehanded operation which appears to take place by actually penetrating the body. Believe me, what you're seeing is strictly special effects, it's sleight of hand, and nothing more. And this is the way it looks. Anything that fits down there, don't get it on your trousers if you can help it. Let me see. terrible. It's getting worse and worse. Just checking out. Oh, no, that doesn't come out. That's a bit better. Just a second. Just one second now.
Maybe better for you.
You don't feel any better? Strange thing is, after this operation is all over, now mind you, folks, I want you to bear in mind, please, that people are showing this as if it were really serious, as if it actually did take place, and as if surgery were really performed. People do this, they go to the Philippines, they spend their money, and they frankly return home, in most cases, to die. It's a little bit funny to watch it, perhaps, and you say, gee, I know it's play acting. It's not play acting when they go, by the tens of thousands every year. Sanford, I want to thank you for being a wonderful volunteer. I think you deserve a round of applause for that. Thanks very much. Thank you for your way.
Thank you so much for the
James Grant.
Now, I must let you in on another little secret of this particular taping, that when the audience got up right after that to leave the studio, they all filed out and such, and I looked and there was a lady dressed in green, and she was swamped over. She had fainted. She had actually fainted at the sight of the blood. So some people are affected by it. I know it's gory, and I apologize if it offended anyone. But remember, these psychic surgeons, so-called, are very active in the Philippines, and they take everybody's money very, very freely, and they're supported by the government as well. Now, during the Marcos regime in the Philippines, it was much more blatant than it is now. But there are still fundamentalist churches all over Canada and the United States and in Europe as well who sponsor journeys over to the Philippines in order to have these operations performed. And they are strictly fake. There's nothing real about them at all. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to tell you how grateful I am to you to invite me back to McGill after 15 years. I've been through a lot since then. Heart bypass, cancer, chemotherapy, the whole thing. Medical science, as I said earlier, it saved me from not being here. And I would like to be back again. Another 15 years will be a good timing, I think. Ho, ho, ho. I'm 82 now, so you do the mathematics. Point is that I'm very, very grateful for the committee having invited me here, and I hope that I have caused you to learn something, to sit up and pay attention. You must know, and that's my bottom line here, that you can be swindled easily if you're up against technology that you don't understand. If you believe the media, if you believe the people who advertise these things, you're doing yourself and your family a great disservice. Be more critical. Critical thinking is the thing that's going to save you from making big, big errors in your life. Please be critical. And you can get results if you write to television programs and to other branches of the media who would present these things to you without criticism. Be critical. Make your voice heard. You're in a democracy, after all, and that democracy should speak. We're now going to take a round of questions from the audience. There are microphones sitting up here in the middle of the aisle. Just make your way to the microphone. We'll handle you one at a time. Just make your way over there. Fight, step on people, it doesn't make a difference. Just be ruthless just to get there. Thank you very, very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Oh, my. Oh, my, my. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you so much. We have a gentleman, good-looking fellow here, standing in a black shirt, and he's going to ask a question. What is your question, sir?
Yes, my question is about the disclosure project. There's a lot of publicity. More and more people say that we are on the edge of disclosing all the secrets about UFOs and extraterrestrials. And there are generals who come to speak and say, yeah, I saw a UFO near a nuclear station or a base, something mm-hmm. like that. And we have so much of that in the films, movies, TV, everywhere. And people say that it will come this year, next year, or 2012, perhaps. So what do you have to say about the Disclosure Project and
well,
UFOs?
I don't know much about the Disclosure Project as such. But I do handle the subject of UFOs in my books and my articles and on my webpage, which is known as Swift, by the way, after Jonathan Swift. And you can get in there by www.randi, that's R-A-N-D-I, .org, and click on it and read it. We add to it several times every week, and we've got a vast, a couple of 100,000 words there of past Swifts that you can refer to. About UFOs, I'm a bit of an amateur astronomer, and I love it. I've got a couple of sizable telescopes that I'm very proud to own, and I do some observing of my own. I've known great astronomers like Carl Sagan, for example, and others who have added to my knowledge of the heavens. The point is with the UFOs, they very well may exist. They may. But Richard Nixon might have been innocent of lying, too. So there are possibilities both ways. You have to think of how far away an interstellar voyage would have to originate from. Now, light goes at 186,000 miles per second. You can't travel faster than that. It's impossible, or you achieve a mass, an infinite mass, and that's obviously impossible. The nearest star system, and we don't know if there are any planets there at all, we've never detected any, is so far away that it would take 4.3 light years for the light just to get to it. And since you can't travel at that speed, you'd have to have many, many generations of inhabitants of another star system to come here to the planet Earth. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible, but we get claims all the time that they have appeared, and they are there. I, in my time, I admit it, I have created several UFO hoaxes, and two of them got on television, and another two got into leading UFO books. And they were declared to be the real thing because there's no way you can fake this sort of thing. I did it with balloons, with hot air balloons, not even gas balloons, just hot air balloons with candles hung beneath them. And it was very successful. It got a lot of newspaper space. If you can make people believe, and a large number of people believe, that these are UFOs that don't have a mundane explanation, I think you have to start thinking twice about whether or not other people could have been fooling you as well. I don't say there is no such thing. I can't prove negatives, of course. There may very well be. But in my estimation, and in my experience over all these decades of investigating this sort of thing, I am not at all convinced, and that doesn't mean it's negative. Remember, I can't prove a negative. I am not convinced that there is anything for which we do not have an adequate explanation. Oh, for the stories, yes. We don't have adequate explanations for those. But when you look at the stories carefully, you realize what they are. They are anecdotal. They are stories. There is no evidence that stands up to examination. Now, again, we may find something through this new project. I certainly hope we do. That would be very exciting to me. If I want anything to be known about the supernatural, the occult, or the paranormal, then I would include that UFOs in that class. And it would be very edifying to me to have absolute proof that there are other systems out there that sustain life. Now, I think it's inevitable. Carl Sagan agreed with me when I gave a speech at Cornell years ago. He said, oh, yes, we have to agree with Mr. Randi that it's impossible for there not to be other life forms out there. But the question is, would they want to come here in the first place? Have they come here? And how the hell could they get here if it takes that long? Centuries and centuries and centuries of travel by one spaceship to reach here. Do they get back? I guess not. I'm not sure. But the point is, I'm willing to accept it. I just need hard evidence. You're welcome. Let's take the gentleman over here, please.
I would like to ask a question on what do you think of Chinese acupuncture, which sometimes is even promoted even by the Soviets for a while. And number two, what about Chinese herbal medicines and natural medicines, like, for example, cutting off rhinoceros horns and elephant tusks and tiger penises for their medicines and all this sort of thing?
The tigers don't like that much, you know.
Yeah. No, because there is also the fact that, as United Nations has pointed out, is that much of the extermination of wildlife in the world now is coming from the so-called boom in Chinese medicines, where many of these animals are Siberian tigers and the rest of it.
It's a crime against society, that particular aspect of it. Yes, I agree with you there. But let's handle this in order now. I had to do some research for my next book, which will be coming out anon, that's all I can tell you. It's called A Magician in the Laboratory. And I underwent the chemotherapy thing for 6 months and did very well with it, thank you. And while I was doing that, I was looking at the literature that's available. And I found that in many dozens of books that I examined, that the National Institutes of Health, now that's a very important American agency, that they were always saying in their books, everything that was published on chemotherapy particularly, they would say in the glossary, you'd look it up in the index and it would say page so-and-so, and you look, there's only one reference to it, and it was in the glossary, explains terms that are used, you see, and it said, you may wish to ask your, this is the exact wording, you may wish to ask your physician about the possible use of acupuncture to relieve the symptoms of chemotherapy, the side effects, pardon me, of chemotherapy. Bang, that's it. That's the only statement they have ever made, the National Institutes of Health. So I got curious, and I wrote to the director, sent him a certified registered letter, didn't hear back from him. I just asked him that simple question. Does the NIH support the use of acupuncture for this purpose? Didn't hear from him. Wrote him another letter, didn't hear from him. Then finally, after several months, I got a letter from one of his flunkies there who said, Mr. Andy, we've received your request. The answer is no, the NIH does not support the use of acupuncture for the relief of the side effects of chemotherapy. Next paragraph. You may wish to consult your physician. Exactly the same statement. At least they're consistent, and it's being politically correct, and it was signed. That's it. Now, appended to that was a list of 308 scientific papers issued on this exact question. I looked at them and soon saw what the nature of them was. Most of them were just junk papers. So what I did was I gave the whole business 300. By the time I got around to doing it, there were 310 scientific papers. I sent them off to a friend in the UK who does analyses of databases like this on a medical standards. And he wrote me back after a couple of months. Turns out that in those 310 scientific, and I use that in quotes, scientific experiments, we discarded all those that didn't have a sufficient database or that were not done double-blind, etc., etc. Eight of them were positive. 22 of them were decidedly negative, and the rest of them didn't qualify. That's what the NIH sent to me, and I thought, wait a minute, where did the NIH get this database? I wonder, Google. I put in acupuncture, relief of side effects, and, the whole thing, just to reference. Boom. It came up with 310 of them. That's exactly what they had done. There were 310 references there. And they didn't mean a damn. You can't get significance out of 8 out of 310 papers that seem to be significant, especially if there are 22 that are exactly the opposite opinion. So that's, I recognize, but the other thing that you asked about herbal medicines, we've got to face it. Most of our medicines are based on, I'm taking digoxin, for example, which is based on digitalis, which is a plant substance. We take aspirin, that was originated in birch bark, of all places. And I don't eat birch trees. They're rather not tasty at all. But I do take aspirin every now and then. Of course, we all do. The point is that most of our medicine originated from these herbal medicines and different natural substances. So I'm all for it. And we have to thank the Asians on the other side of the world. We have to thank them for this contribution to our good health and well-being. But to believe that anything that comes off a tree or from under the ground, toadstools or the whole thing, are going to help us just because they're natural is a big mistake, I would say. We owe a great deal to the Chinese. We don't owe them acupuncture. We can hold that against them. But another thing, just in passing, acupuncture in Thailand, in India, in Korea, we don't know about North Korea, if they use any or if they know what it's all about. We're not sure. We don't want to know. And the Japanese market, the Chinese market, they're all completely different. The acupuncture points on their body are all different. They don't agree with one another. So how could they be the same, quote, science? They can't be. So you can't evaluate them compared to one another. All right? Thank you, sir.
The animal parts?
The what?
The animal parts, like bear bios.
They're all these exotic, rare animals that cost a great deal. And they're taking tusks from animals rather than killing the animal just to get the tusks. And the tiger parts, we won't go into the details of that. The tiger parts, and they sell them in pharmaceutical stores all the time. I don't know what I'm getting if I buy them. I don't, because it hasn't done me one bit of good. No, I've never taken them, of course. But I think that is, that's a criminal. That's an act against society. And I think something should be done to try to stop this.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Just two brief items. One, you've been a big influence on my life, and I'd like to thank you for your work.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You were on the Carson Show, the great Johnny Carson, for many years, and that was in the days of the big three networks. Today, with the Internet, people can construct their own news feeds. They can, unfortunately, the unfortunate side effect of being able to pick and choose exactly what media you get is that you can unintentionally build your own echo chamber and entrap yourself in unfortunate opinion or just you're not getting enough feedback. So what is the next step for you and your inheritors in your work? In the age of the Internet?
Well, first of all, we emphasize, it's called the James Randi Educational Foundation, you may have noticed. We insist that education needs to be improved by having critical thinking thought at very early stages of different learning processes and educational systems. We want kids to be taught to think about these things. And kids love it if they're asked questions like that. Have you ever looked at this? Let's talk about it. And I'll let you look into it. Kids grab projects like that because they are curious about the world. Make use of this precious asset that we have. Children's curiosity and their ability to really think about these things and encourage them to think. That critical thinking, I think, is the solution to the whole thing. And that's what we promote at the James Randi Education Foundation. Next question, sir.
Yes. Thank you.
Oh, you have a beautiful book in your hand there.
Yeah. I bought it about 5 minutes ago, and I thought I had something up to date. And I look inside, and it's dated 82. That's 28 years ago.
That's right.
And I paid $27.98 plus tax.
I'm sorry?
Is it up to date? I mean, everything I read here is... In the preface, it's very disturbing, actually. It says, the adventures of this book has been numerous. Contracted by one publisher with great enthusiasm, then passed on to a successor where it received a somewhat less delight. And finally inherited by eventual producer with no interest whatsoever in its future. Wow. The original hardcover book was planned to have first printing of 17,000 copies. It ended up 5,000. Now, I'm an engineer. I can hardly read, but that caught my eye.
I understand. Yeah.
I'm just saying, is anything changed? And why would you be only selling this book when you have numerous other books?
First of all, the book has now gone through 11 editions. It sold very, very well. And I must admit, it made some money for me. I don't live on the royalties from it, but it's done very well for me. And I have 9 books out altogether now, and the 10th, as I said, of the Magician of the Laboratory, will be out anon. I'm not too sure exactly when. I'm working on it at this very moment. And I have other books out there. The Faith Healers, for example, is another book which got me a lot of attention and sold many, many copies. I have a lot of books out there. That's my immortality. I know that after I die, and I think that'll probably happen one of these days. I'm not encouraging it. Please, please, I got things to do. Or please, I have things to do. I'm not sure which way to look. I suspect maybe down there. But I appreciate the fact that 20 or 30 years from now, some kid will be in a library, and he'll be going through books, flim flam. I wonder what that's all about. That's my mortality. That's my immortality, pardon me. That's my immortality, and that's what I look forward to having happen. I won't know it, but I think that's going to happen. I'm glad that you got a copy of my book, Sue. Thank you.
Thank you for the radio today. You said that God speaks English. Remember that?
That's what I was told when I was dealing about Houdini.
Yes.
Called up the spirit of his mother through some of the spiritualists. Of course, he didn't believe in any of that nonsense. And he was very astonished to find out that his mother, Celia, spoke English fluently. She had never spoken a word of English in her life. But then the spiritual said, well, of course, everyone knows that everyone in English, pardon me, in heaven, speaks English. How about French? A little tad of French, maybe? Un petit peu? I don't know. I'm not sure.
But thank you.
Thank you very much for your question, sir. Yes, sir.
So my question has to do with homeopathy. Now, obviously, I've listened to everything you had to say. There's obviously in medicine a great value to placebos. Do you draw the line anywhere in terms of the usefulness of homeopathy in terms of placebos, or is there a line to be drawn at all?
Good question. Thank you for that, sir. Yeah, placebo effect, we all know what that is, I think. It's a psychological effect. That if you break your leg, placebos are not going to fix it. Or a bacterial disease, any kind of an infection, a viral disease, any of these things, or a tumor is not going to be changed or cured by placebo. It will make you feel better temporarily if you have faith in it. But my question, the basic question is, wait a minute, do you want to be better or do you want to just feel better? Grab a joint, that'll make you feel better. It will. It will, guaranteed, but it won't last, and you'll die. That's all there is to it. So the question is, feeling better, is that as good as being better? I think the answer is no.
James Randi, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Those of you who wish to come down for photographs, questions, down here. Energy abounds.
Oh, I just got a cramp. I can't do autographs.
Oh, well.
Yes, I don't show up on...
What? Because I had such a good thing to say.